Well, this time you won. In my simple Bible way, I did a lot of praying. One world at a time is good enough for me.
Can we ease it all up now, sir? Is it all right, sir? Wait a minute, why wasn't I informed about all this?
Everyone just heard, sir. Might have been here sooner. Is there anything I can do?
Yes, Marsh. Gonna need some help.
Help, sir? What are you gonna do?
Gonna start again.
Hello and welcome to episode 950 of Dread Media. I'm your host, Desmond Raddick, back with you for another great episode. How do I know it's great? Because I've just sat down and edited through the whole thing, which I recorded this earlier today, I guess late morning, on Friday, and you're getting this Monday. Patreon people, patreon.com/dreadmedia, are getting it tonight once I'm finished recording the intro and outro and compiling the whole episode. So check that. Well, I'm telling you to check that before. You get it. You get it. Patreon.com. Support the show. Patreon.com/dreadmedia. Thank you. All right. What is going on? Episode 950. It's a big special one. And, Tom and I are taking a look at a film series that I have been interested in for a very, very, very long time, but I've never seen. So this is all brand new to me. Tom and I are taking a look at the Quatermass series. I'm going to bring out my phone here so I can look at IMDb while I talk to you here. Just want to get all the titles right. So first we're looking at 1955's The Quatermass Experiment. Now that's an experiment with an X in the front. There's no E there. And then there is Quatermass 2, aka Enemy from Space. And then there is Quatermass and the Pit, aka 5 million years to Earth. And then there is the 1979 ITV 4 episode TV series, The Quatermass Conclusion, which also had a movie version, but it's, it's impossible. It's not out there. Right? I can probably steal it, but whatever. Anyway, so we're looking at those, four main, inclusions in the Quatermass series. Tom is essentially the Quatermass expert and I'm the newbie. So we're gonna talk about all those movies and we're gonna listen to some tunes. And we're going to have a good old time celebrating episode 950. Thank you so much for everyone who's listening. I'll let you know right off the top here that as far as I'm concerned, next week should be the 2025 year in review. Oh, yeah, I should have said Happy New Year, as it is now 2026. Happy New Year to everybody out there. And then, next week should be our 2025 year in review episode. That will definitely be our next episode, whether it's next week or not. Well, it really all depends on how much work I get done this weekend with some marking for work and also with the creation of my lists. Because I really haven't done any of that. Usually I have that going for a couple weeks before the end of the year, but I have not this year. So, yeah, just saying, it may take an extra week. Which will also give me more time to watch movies I haven't seen from 2025 yet, making it harder to make my list. But we live, we love, we learn, we do all these things. Episode 950. Cheers, y'all. All right. So we're going to get right to that. I want to throw a thank you out to, officially Dread Media's oldest friend of the show, my friend, author, mentor, David Agronoff. He posted, I've heard this band name before, probably specifically because they opened for the Sex Pistols in America, I'm assuming, is what that poster shows me. So they were, you know, sort of a very, like, lesser known first wave of punk band. I'm talking about Indiana's The Gizmos. And, The Gizmos have a song that's, very appropriate to get us into the Quatermass experiment, and that's The Gizmos with Dead Astronauts.
Yes, we are here. It's a new year. We survived.
That's right. Happy New Year. Happy episode 950.
Today, we are talking about something that was inspired by the fact that Hammer Films is putting out special collector's editions of some of its landmark films.
Mm.
And this film we're about to discuss and its sequels can be considered patient zero of the golden age of British horror.
Right. This was kind of Hammer's first hit, right? Like the first movie here. Yeah.
Well, I mean, they were successful in England doing historicals and film noirs of all things. But this was the film that broke them outside of the UK.
Right.
Big time.
Right. Well,
so we are.
Yeah, go ahead.
We are talking about the Quatermass Experiment, and that's with an X instead of an EX.
Mm-hmm.
From 1955, also known here in the States as The Creeping Unknown.
Creeping Unknown. And this is the first of, well, let me just say this correctly. This is the first of three films that we are going to discuss today, as well as a four-part TV serial, which we'll talk all about then. But I think it's important to bring up that every one of the three films we're going to talk about today are adaptations of TV serials.
Right.
Yeah. Of popular BBC TV serials.
Mm-hmm.
And many of these are viewable. This is the first time we've done this for Dread Media on Internet Archive at archive.org.
And it's impossible to talk about the films we're about to talk about without talking about Thomas Nigel Neal, who was something of a... I compared him at one point, I think, in an earlier episode, to, like, the Rod Serling of Great Britain, because in addition to doing the Quatermass films, he did the Stone Tape.
Mm. Oh, right. Okay. Right.
The Year of the Sex Olympics.
Okay.
The Abominable Snowman, which was also a...
That's a Hammer film, right?
Became a Hammer film. Yeah. It was one of the first times Peter Cushing had a lead role.
Mm.
And also, he apparently pissed Hollywood off really, really badly.
How so?
Well, we'll get to that when we get to the end of the story.
Okay.
Because after we talk about Quatermass conclusion, we're going to talk a little bit about Nigel Neal's adventures in Hollywood.
Okay. Well, let's sort of like introduce the topic first. When did you first like know about Quatermass?
Well, you know, I have always been, and this is something we've discussed most particularly on the review of Last Night in Soho we did a while ago.
You're an Anglophile.
I love British television, specifically the British television of the mod 60s.
Right.
So I knew about Quatermass because I got into British television and started digging deep.
Mm.
But the thing is, he's one of these characters that is probably a name checked in Britain a lot, but probably outside of that country, nobody knows.
Well, it's also like telling that all the movies that are considered, I guess none of the TV things came over to America, but the movies that are considered Quatermass films,
right,
do not have the name Quatermass in their American title.
That is correct.
Right.
But we're going to refer them primarily by their British titles.
Right. Right.
Because it's easier to remember because Quatermass is in all of them. So.
For me, I think the first time I heard about Quatermass was in an interview I read with Clive Barker.
Oh.
And it immediately piqued my interest because it was something I'd never heard before. And Clive Barker was a fan. So fast forward, I actually dug this magazine out. Got rid of most of my magazines over the years, but I do have this copy of Cinescape Presents, a special collector's issue. What is the date on this one? If I can read. November 2001. I remember buying this and reading it on the bus to university. And this is their special issue of the A to Z Guide to Halloween Horror.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can imagine what Q is.
Of course.
Right? So I read that and I was like, oh yeah, I remember Clive Barker said something about this. And in the, you know, the 2-page spread on Quatermass in this magazine, it also talks about how influenced John Carpenter was by these films. And so I was like, damn, I have to watch these. Fast forward, now almost 25 years later, I'm watching them for the first time to talk to Tom.
And I've been basically, when Hammer started released the Quatermass Experiment in this beautiful collector's edition, I said, this is the perfect time to talk about them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
well, lead us into the Quatermass Experiment then.
Okay. The Quatermass Experiment, which is based on Neil's, play by the same name, only with an E in front of the X.
Mm-hmm.
Is about Bernard Quatermass and his rocket group, the Quatermass Rocket Group.
I think it's called the British Rocket Group, right?
The British Rocket Group, and they have sent men into space. And then the rocket goes down.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one man left.
When three left.
No, there were three went up, yeah. One came down.
Yeah.
And there are empty, the other two were apparently there because there are empty astronaut suits.
Mm-hmm.
And the remaining living man is not behaving well. And his wife is very distraught because of how her husband is behaving. And against everybody's wishes, she takes him out of the hospital.
Right, yeah.
And shenanigans ensue.
Because that's what you do to someone who's been completely cosmically irradiated at mm-hmm. best is, you know what? You don't need to be around these medical professionals.
Right. And here we get a major theme of Nigel Neal's work, which is, you're fucked. No matter what humanity does,
this is some pretty bleak shit.
Yeah. Wait until we get to the conclusion. Ay, ay, ay. But this film was written by Richard Landau and Val Guest. It's the only one of the films that does not have Neil's hand in it.
Oh, right.
And it's the start of him being a bastard. But we'll but anyway, because at this time, Hammer was in the habit of casting an American actor as a lead.
Mm.
They cast our old frenemy, Brian Donlevy. Luster the human being.
Yeah. Still, though, kind of a role that's perfect for him.
Well, that's the thing. Neil hated Dunleavy's portrayal.
Did
claiming
he?
That he was a bully.
That he was a bully?
A bully, saying that he came off, that Quatermass came off as a bully.
See, I like Quatermass because he's very matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I don't find him to be a bully, but he's just like this scientist who sort of tells it like it is. I mean, up until, like, certainly it feels like a different character in conclusion.
Yeah, it's interesting because we have three actors doing four different interpretations of the character.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This first one is definitely more somber, very much just the facts, Jack. It could be, like, a spinoff of Dragnet, for God's sake.
Right.
You know, like, just, like, really, really, like, achingly sober. And I don't know. I thought Dunleavy did a great job in that portrayal.
I kind of agree with you on this because I think the fact that he is overbearing,
yeah,
and the fact that he sticks to his guns gives the final scene an impact that wouldn't be there if he was more like the Andrew Keir version or the John Mills version.
Right.
The whole point of Quatermass's arc in the first film is, dude, don't learn nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, he's in charge, right? Like, he's calling the shots. Yeah. Like, he's got a team, and his team does what he says. And sometimes that's just like, hey, do this right now. Like, right. and maybe that could come across as being a bully. But I just find that as, you know, coming across as, you know, the guy's in charge. Now, he doesn't make, you know, 100% right choices. No one in a movie does, because you wouldn't get the rest of the movie. Yeah, I mean, I think he's a pretty well written, a pretty well drawn, a pretty well acted character in this film for sure. And I would say in a few of what we're going to watch.
I don't think there's a bad performance of Quatermass in the four pieces of media we're going to look at.
No.
I think this is my least favorite of the four.
Oh, really? Okay. Okay. Interesting.
But it's necessary. The way he comes off in this first film is necessary to give the denouement the impact that I think Neil intended when he wrote it.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I think maybe gravitas is that?
that might work too.
Is that what they're aiming for? I think probably.
But I think the point that I took away from watching this film is, after all this is over, he really did. He's like, we're gonna go back and shoot another rocket up. He learns nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna start again. It's the last, the last line he speaks. Fantastic, fantastic. he's an ideologue, right? Like, like it's like, okay, well, this one didn't work out. The next one will, right? I mean, ultimately, for advancements to happen, you need people in the world like Quatermass. I just find him a very intriguing portrayal of a pulp hero. He's a pulp hero who's, I won't say like averse to action, but far more anchored in intelligence and you know, like research and stuff like that. You know, it's very, I think, a very British hero.
It's very cerebral.
Yeah I mean, and, like, you know, essentially he is a character like Indiana Jones, but
right.
And I think they're both like very both are scholars, right? And they both have these adventures. And I think that holding, you know, the Indiana Jones films up against the Quatermass films, it shows a really interesting difference between like the American and the British takes on pulp heroes, as having two sort of almost extremes of the subgenre in that portrayal, you know? So I, you know, while I'm, you know, probably more conducive to enjoying a bit of action, I like this sort of like war room style sci-fi movie, if that makes sense. Like it's a sci-fi movie, but it has the vibe of, oh, I don't know, like an impending nuclear attack movie. You know what I mean? Like a Cold War style movie.
You could say that Neil's view of science fiction, as portrayed by these four pieces, is of quote unquote hard science fiction.
Yeah.
Also with a touch of 60s social science fiction kind of mixed in, especially in the last two.
Yeah. Last one, especially. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, bleakest thing we're ever going to see.
They might as well have just called that one the Quatermass analogy.
Yeah, and he made it very clear that he did not like soft science fiction. He had a feud going on with the BBC over Doctor Who that lasted his entire fucking life.
He seems like a pretty contentious fella.
Yeah, yeah. Which led to, in 1970, when they The BBC wanted to do an episode of Doctor Who, a serial called Spearhead from Space, which is a very blatant kind of tip of the hat to the second film.
Right.
The way that the copyrights work in Great Britain is that the company can own the play, but each individual character is owned by the writer.
Right.
So they wanted to name check Quatermass as being one of the former scientific advisors for UNIT. And Neil said no. And this is a lot of Neil. Neil's done said no a lot to many things. It's only, in fact, until this year that we got Bernard Quatermass name checked in Doctor Who.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Long after he died.
Right. Right.
But yeah, he hated a lot of things, which is in keeping with all of the British writers I see. Most British writers of this era that I really enjoy, like, you know, Roald Dahl.
Right. Well, I was also just going to throw like Alan Moore out there.
Oh yeah.
That sounds like a very similar vibe.
So this was a big hit on television. Hammer remade it with Brian Dunleavy. I want to point out the actor who played. Did I hit the?
I hear you fine. Something happened, but it was very short.
Okay. The actor who played the astronaut.
Yeah. What's his name? I'm trying to look it up, but I actually have it on my phone. What was the astronaut's name again? Was that Caroon?
Just a second. Oh, no. I'm looking at the wrong thing. Duh.
Am I looking at the right movie? I'm looking at the right movie.
No, you're looking at, I'm sure.
I think it was Richard Wordsworth, right?
Richard Wordsworth, yes. Doesn't say a word.
No, he just spends most of the movie just looking sickly.
there's such agony in his eyes.
Yeah.
And you got to give this guy credit because it's not even really a physical role. It's not even a physical performance.
Yeah. Just like a presence.
He gets so much through with just his facial movements.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Ginchy monster at the end.
Right.
Which Quatermass narrowly defeats. What? We're gonna hit it with some electricity. That seems to be Quatermass's problem to most everything.
I mean, why not? Shock the shit out of it.
Stick with what works, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But the reason this film was renamed to the Quatermass Experiment, just an X instead of EX, is because 1955 was the year that Britain introduced the X rating.
Oh.
And this was an experiment on Hammer's part to see if the audience was there for X, in Britain, X means something entirely different, X-rated fare.
Right.
And because this was a wild success, producer Anthony Hines authorized a little film called The Curse of Frankenstein.
Oh.
He also commissioned a sequel without letting Neil know, which Neil put a kibosh on right there and then. So they had to basically rename the hero, recast him with Dean Jager, and that became X the Unknown.
Right, right. Huh.
But this is, I'm sure a lot of our fans here haven't seen this, but it is something to be seen because it literally is ground zero.
Yeah.
Of an entire movement of horror cinema.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's early filmic cosmic horror, right?
Mm-hmm.
For sure. I don't know what the first would be, but it's
pretty early. It's pretty early anyway. Mm-hmm. Do you know about this unmade prequel?
I do not know about the unmade prequel.
Quatermass in the Third Reich.
Oh, that sounds...
An idea conceived by Neil in the late 90s would have shown Quatermass traveling to Nazi Germany during the 1936 Berlin Olympics and becoming involved with Wernher von Braun and the German rocket program before helping a young Jewish refugee to escape from the country.
Oh, dear. That doesn't...
Sounds fraught, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sounds like a very sticky wicket, shall we say.
Maybe not the best writer to deal with that kind of situation.
I'm worried that it would not have aged well.
Yeah, for sure.
I'd much rather have, even though, as we'll get to when we get to the conclusion, there was a lot of outcry as to how he treated certain characters.
Right.
And it's... that would have been really, really sticky.
Yeah. Well, if you're kind of like me, now I sort of plan on watching the serial versions of some of these.
Well,
this one is not available other than, I believe, the first two episodes, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And it is available on the Hammer box set.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah, it's also available on our archive.org.
And the BBC also... much more recently, during that time when television, terrestrial television, got really excited about live performances.
Right. Yeah. Well, I was just going to bring this up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, please. No, go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. They put on a live remake. Basically a performance of the original script.
Yeah. Live, though.
Live, yeah. But that's how it went out.
Like this is not just... Hold on, I'm trying to read this. So this is not just like a live table read. This is like a live production, right?
Yes.
Hey, that's on archive too. I think I need to check that out. That sounds really interesting. 2005. That seems like it's after the era of like ER's live episode.
Oh no! We're talking about when they did Grease Law, the era where
right.
Peter
that was
Pan
like
live.
Yeah, like the live musical stuff, right?
Live musical stuff.
Huh.
We'll get to the attempts to remake some of this shit.
Right. Right.
And yeah, I who played Quatermass in that 2005?
Oh, Jason Fleming, the director?
Okay. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Sean's son.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Oh, no,
he didn't.
I'm thinking of somebody else, but yeah.
No, he didn't direct it. He just stars in it. Sorry.
Yeah,
It was directed by Sam Miller.
Oh, we should mention who directed this.
Right.
Val Guest.
Yeah.
One of the favorite directors of RKO.
Mm, yeah.
And it is suitably kind of moody and atmospheric. I particularly like those opening scenes at the rocket crash.
Yeah. Yeah, very good mix of, like, you know, sci-fi sort of exciting imagery, but also sort of like really, like, I don't know, like drenched in reality. You know, it really does just feel like a site, like a crash site or whatever, you know, when they're out there.
Right. The person behind the transformation of Karun into basically the Blob's European Eurotrash brother.
Yeah. Or like, what is it? The Incredible Melting Man? Is that it?
Well,
yeah.
It,
like
it
very
starts out as the Incredible Melting Man, but ends up being the Blob's Eurotrash brother.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, like, you can definitely see that kind of stuff in this. Although I guess like the Blob predates. Oh no. The Blob comes after that, right? 59 is the Blob.
Yeah. Okay. So the Blob came. So yeah. So
I'm making that up. Is it 59? 58. I was close. 58.
58. Okay. So maybe we should say that the blob
is a Quatermass ripoff.
Not the first one, as we'll get to.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that transformation was done by Phil Leakey.
The makeup, you mean?
With some help from cinematographer Walter J. Harvey.
Hmm.
But like I said, I think even more than anybody else, I think that the most valuable player has to be Richard Wordsworth.
Yeah.
That just impressed me so much, his performance.
Just like, whoa, you know? Like, take a screen grab of any time he's on screen, and like, the whoa is one of the words that really just comes to mind.
You realize now I have in my mind Keanu Reeves, who's about that age right now, has Quatermass.
It's Quatermass, huh? Hmm.
I could see him bringing that intensity that Don Levy gives in this.
And I mean, I was initially going to say, well, you know, he's not British, but he does a great British accent as shown in Bram Stoker's Dracula. So that was a joke.
Yes, I know. I know. Lord, it's available widely now. So you can find it. And yeah. I would definitely say it's short. It's like under 90 minutes, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
It's fairly straightforward. Unlike the next one.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely. And also like a little different than what you're used to seeing. But also very, you know, also one of the foundational pillars of the kind of stuff you're used to seeing, you know, at the same time. It's very, very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And also because Quatermass is the blueprint for a number of characters throughout horror television.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Without Quatermass, we would not have Kolchak the Night Stalker, which means we would not have
Mulder and Scully.
We would not have the scientist character from Fringe.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah. So,
yeah. Oh, holy shit. He would have made a great Quatermass, actually.
Yes, he would.
Well, shit. Either him or Nimoy too.
Also, without Quatermass, I don't think we would get one of yours and mine's favorite, sort of forgotten film, Horror Express.
Oh, right.
Because Horror Express is basically what if Quatermass,
huh,
in the early 20th century?
Yeah, maybe.
Because once again,
a little bit.
Horror Express, the thing is, you're fucked. Plus, we've got Telly Savalas playing a Cossack.
Yeah. I would say that probably Horror Express probably has the closest relationship to Quatermass and the Pit.
Yeah, definitely.
But we'll get there.
I would say, as a film, I would give this 4 stars.
Okay, yeah.
But I'm giving it 5 stars for its massive influence on an entire arm of horror cinema.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I'm going to stick to a 4, but yeah, I think that's a fair statement to make.
And like I said, they wanted to do more Quatermass, Nigel Neal was like, no. But then the BBC said, we want more Quatermass because there's this new corporation called ITV that's going to start broadcasting television.
Right.
And that's where we get the imaginatively named Quatermass 2.
Right after we listen to Rocket Freak by Monster by Monster Magnet.
Our faves.
Two years later. Yeah. Pretty quick turnaround. It was a, you know, pretty successful film.
In between, there was, like I said, an attempt to do a Quatermass sequel without Neil.
Right. Right.
And the BBC also sold Hammer the rights to the Neil teleplay, The Creature, which became The Abominable Snowman.
Oh, okay. Right.
But under pressure from the BBC, because a rival network was setting up shop, Neil created what is known as Quatermass 2, what is known here by the wonderfully evocative name Enemy from Space.
Right.
And this is my least favorite.
Yeah, mine too.
Well, is it your turn to describe what the fuck happens?
I don't really know what happens in this one.
It's a little confusing. Yeah, it is a little confusing.
If I'm being dead honest, I don't really know. This one is confusing. Maybe the most cerebral of the entire run, and like the the least active in that, you know, the least stuff happens.
Yeah, although there's just a lot of running around. Okay, let's see if I can put it together. So Quatermass is trying to get authorization and funding from the government for a manned mission to the moon.
That'll never happen.
That'll never happen. And he ends up at some point crashing his car outside of an industrial complex, which freaks him out.
Yeah.
Freaks him out a bit because it looks just like the moon colony plans his rocket group has put together.
Yeah.
And furthermore, he discovers these weird pods. And his assistant opens one of the pods, gets this kind of acid goop on his face, and he's taken away by, you know, unidentified military people who are not ICE.
Yeah, right.
And he's trying to get his friend back. And he discovers that this complex is a spearhead for an invasion plan by a liquid alien race, I think.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like a food plant.
Yeah. And they're keeping these aliens in these giant tanks while they're busy trying to terraform the Earth.
Yeah.
To make this place viable for these creatures.
You know, like, as we're sort of stumbling through the plot here, mm-hmm. I'm like, man, this is such a great idea for like a paranoid thriller.
Mm-hmm.
But that aspect is not played up at all.
No.
Right? Like, it's all just like, they're building something that looks like what we're building on the moon. I wonder what they're doing there.
This film is composed of Brian Dunleavy going from his rocket group to Parliament.
Yeah, right.
To the facility, back to Parliament.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting idea, and it's also I gotta look up what the name of the damn channel is. There is a YouTube channel.
Okay.
Hosted by an author by the name of Robin.
Okay.
And he calls one shot in this film the first iconic shot in a Hammer horror film.
Huh.
Can you guess which one that is?
Like the melting face?
Yeah, the melting, yes. The guy coming down from the tank, melting.
Right, yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, what would it be otherwise? I guess maybe the shot of the complex.
The name of the YouTube channel is Dark Corners Reviews. I want to make sure to give that proper accreditation and a shout out. The guy is really, really smart, really good, very insightful.
Right on.
So, Robin, this, much props to you. This is my least favorite, although it probably features my favorite Brian Dunleavy performance.
He's really great in this movie. He is kind of a saving grace.
This is the first time and last time that Dunleavy is working off of a script that was co-written by Neil.
Okay, yeah.
And while he's still a blustery idiot, there's a lot more nuance.
Humanity. He feels more like a person.
Yes.
As opposed to like a stern scientist character.
He's very caring about the villagers.
Yeah, right.
And I really did appreciate the improvement. I still don't think Dunleavy is a very good actor. But I think this is, of all of his performances I've seen across cinema, this is my favorite of his.
He's pretty good.
Yeah, but Neil tried to push him off. But Hammer said, no, we need continuity.
Right.
Like I said, it's the least of the four.
And you know what? It's got maybe something we didn't say yet, because we haven't really, this is the first sequel we're talking about, but
yeah.
I think what lies at the heart of each of these Quatermass stories is a really cool idea. And then it's up to the filmmakers to sort of explore that idea. I just feel like the cool idea is explored way better in the first and third and fourth iteration of.
I think part of the problem is that these other, well, maybe not the last one, but like Experiment and Pit.
Yeah.
Both have fairly linear, straightforward plots.
That's true. Well, it's not a linear plot for a conclusion, for sure. But also still, not my favorite idea. My favorite idea comes in Pit. But
it's they were all gung-ho about doing a third until The Curse of Frankenstein far eclipsed the box office.
Right.
And they're like, okay, we're gonna go with this direction.
Time to shift focus. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't blame them for that.
Apparently, Don Levy was so drunk that
Right, he's kind of like a notorious alcoholic, right?
He was an actor in the 50s.
What else yeah, I guess. Can you say? Sure, yeah.
The only thing that would have made it worse is if he was an English actor from the 50s. but they had to have production assistants hold up an idiot board with his lines on it so he would remember them.
Oh, man.
And according to Neil, you know, Neil being a misanthrope of the First Order, complained that he kept asking, what's this movie called? And they said, well, it's called Quatermass 2. And he said, I got to say all that? That's too much talk. Cut down some of the talk. It's
insane.
It's insane. But there's still cool stuff in this film.
Yeah.
We mentioned the effect that these liquid aliens have on human beings.
Yeah.
It's goopy.
Yeah, this is true.
It's pretty goopy.
And, yeah, again, like definitely a precursor to The Incredible Melting Man and you know that kind of stuff and The Blob and you know what springs forth from all that, you know, like Slime City, Street Trash, all that stuff just sort of comes from this sort of tiny sub genre of, you know, slime movies.
Right. And this film is once again directed by Val Guest.
Yep.
So we get this atmosphere. I'm particularly struck with the, much like with the Quatermass Experiment, I'm very struck by the night shoots, particularly the climax where we finally get to see what these things look like.
Right.
Which they look like, you talked about Lovecraftian before.
Mm.
These things are definitely look like Lovecraftian. What's the Lovecraftian monster? Just basically a pillar?
Yeah.
A flesh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Chagas, I think they're called? Yeah.
Yeah. I think, were those? I get them all mixed up. Not a Night Gaunt.
No. Night Gaunts are like the faceless guys with the wings. Basically.
Yeah.
Welcome to tonight's edition of Name That Lovecraftian Horror.
Perhaps a Shoggoth, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a Shoggoth. And this film had a pretty big impact on the producer Barry Letts, because he, when he took over as producer of Doctor Who, the first script he commissioned was The Spearhead from Space, which is very, very similar.
Right.
Because it's about a bunch of pods that land on Earth, and they're, the things inside are control plastic. But yeah, this is the least of the four. I would probably give it a 3.
I think there's, that's fair. Yeah,
I think 3 is fair. There's still some stuff you can get out of it, but it's kind of underwhelming, especially as it's placed between these two really great films.
It might have the best Quatermass quote. And again, the final line.
Okay.
Right. Lomax says to him, the reporter, right? Lomax.
Yeah.
You know what worries me?
Lomax is
oh, right. He's the minister.
Lestrade to his homes.
Yeah. You know what worries me? How am I going to make a final report about all this? And Quatermass says, what worries me is how final can it be? Music soars. Credits.
Oh, yes.
Good shit.
It's... But, I have a song for this one.
Yeah.
From a band that I didn't know, you went to see live, and you came back and said, this is a great band! And I said...
Well, yeah, I didn't go to see them live, but I saw them.
They opened
for Three Inches of Blood, and I was like, "Holy shit!" Got found a new favorite band.
If I had known you would be interested in this, I would have shared their first album with you.
Well, I got it very soon after, so
yes,
no worries there.
And they put out a Halloween themed EP this year.
Yeah,
last year.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And one of the songs is called, I think it's called They Came From Outer Space.
They Came From Space.
It Came From Space, which is sure what happened in this film.
Definitely.
There's also covers of Pet Sematary and Halloween on this EP.
That's right. And a couple other originals as well.
And the band's name is Unto Others, by the way, because I think we forgot to mention that.
Unto
Others.
Yes. Unto Others with They Came From Space.
Now we're at the best.
The pit.
I think you and I agree on that, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, by a wide margin, this is the best movie, for sure.
And I also think that Andrew Keir is probably the best of the four of the Quatermasses.
I would also agree with that.
Yeah. I think John Mills, although I think part of that is the fault of the script, had to choose a lane.
Right.
As to what kind of character his Quatermass was. But anyway,
right.
Let me know when you're ready.
Yeah, let's go.
We're traveling a long way away for the third film. You know how long?
5 million miles.
No, 5 million years.
Oh, years, right. Sorry, why did I think of 5 million years?
Because you're considering, you're thinking of 5 million miles to Earth, which right. is a Harryhausen film with the Yimmer.
Oh, yeah, right, okay. Right.
But we're talking about 5 million years to Earth.
Right.
Which is known in England as Quatermass in the Pit.
Quatermass and the Pit.
Down the fucking best film in this series.
Yeah.
It is live. Neil wrote the script by himself.
Okay.
He put some qualifications when Hammer wanted to adapt this script, which was, I think, broadcast in the 50s, but it didn't come out till 1967.
Oh, okay.
And one of the things was, no Brian Don Levy. Fuck that guy.
Yeah.
So Hammer dipped into its backlog of key players and came up with Andrew Keir.
Mm-hmm.
Easily the best of the Quatermasses.
Yeah, yeah. I would have loved to see 5 movies with this direction.
Would you like to summarize?
Yeah.
Quatermass in the Pit.
What are they? Are they like refurbishing like a tube station?
I think so. They're building an extension.
Okay. Right. Yeah. Okay. So they're extending the tube underground and. Yeah, it's the simplest plot of them all.
Yeah,
which is weird to say a little bit, but yeah, and then they come across something they don't quite know what it is, so they bring in some science experts, and one of those science experts includes our old friend Professor Quatermass,
who is brought in at the request of the military,
right? Right,
represented by Julian Glover.
Yeah.
The stiffest upper lip of all the upper lips. Although the funniest part of this film is at one point he's affected by the entropic element and he makes faces and yeah. It's hilarious.
Right, right. And so they discover underneath the city streets there is they call it Martians, right?
Yes. Yes, yeah, they do.
They find what they call I don't remember them definitively figuring out it's from Mars.
I think it has something to do, I think maybe.
The radiation?
I think it might have something to do with the fact that they are tripod creatures.
Oh, right. Okay.
They're like grasshoppers with three legs.
But they unearth this spaceship underneath that is controlling people on Earth through and also like the remains of ape men
with big brains,
big old brains, very like ultra humanite style skeletal findings. And yeah, so we have this ancient buried spaceship causing undue harm and influence on the people of Earth and like weird mutated creatures and of course strange aliens and it's just like really it's the coolest one by far.
One of his assistants, Barbara Judd, played by the rather striking Barbara Shelley, has discovered a history in this neighborhood of riots.
Yeah, right.
And Quatermass realizes there's something, there's a connection between this history of riots and these, this spaceship.
Yeah.
And they discover something that they maybe they didn't want to discover about the nature of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
In this film.
Yeah.
And of course, how do they defeat the psychic tripods? Shoot it with energy.
Exactly. Turn up the electricity.
Turn up the electricity.
The only thing that's ever worked for me.
this is first off, this is a 1967 Hammer.
Yeah.
So Hammer knows how to make a little look like a lot.
Yeah, it's a little looser. It breathes a little more. Mm-hmm. You know, like it feels more modern for sure. Absolutely, yeah.
So it was inspired by the race riots that were going on in Britain in the late 50s.
Okay.
It's once again, it's even more, we're fucked. It's like,
yeah. Yeah. This one's slightly different. It's like, oh, we've been fucked.
Yeah, exactly.
There was never any hope.
Some of the best of Keir's work comes from him as Quatermass realizing that there is no free will, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's lovely to look at. Great actors. We've talked about Julian Glover, who mm-hmm. is the who actually takes the Brian Dunleavy role in this one.
Right. He's almost got like, it's almost like his eyebrows are like super glued into stern position. Very funny. The best quote from this one,
yes,
actually doesn't even come from Quatermass. Mm-hmm. It comes from Barbara.
Right.
Do you know the one?
You tell me what it is.
We are the Martians now. Good shit.
Oh gosh, this is so good.
Yeah, yeah. This is one. So when I was talking about it earlier, I want to go back and I want to watch the what is it? Six episode. Serial of this one, because like of all the Quatermass stuff I've watched, this is the first one I've watched where like, yeah, I want more of this specifically story, you know.
And this is the film that people really want to remake.
Understandable. It's a fucking awesome idea. It's just an awesome idea.
Yeah,
like the Thing, right? Mm-hmm. Springs from this for sure. Prince of Darkness springs from this.
Oh,
like there's a lot of like Carpenter's like creativity was really piqued by this movie.
Hell,
They Live.
Mm-hmm. Carpenter used a pseudonym to write Prince of Darkness.
Right. Right.
Which is very, very obvious what he's paying tribute to.
Of course, I forgot. Yeah.
And the thing is, it's people talking mostly.
Yes.
It's just people talking. There's the creatures are kind of strange looking.
Mm-hmm.
Although the primal memory that they look at.
Right.
And that's because there's this guy with equipment that makes that projects the primal memories of these creatures.
Very Horror Express.
Yeah, but it is kind of goofy.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
It's basically
yeah.
these little figurines jumping up and down, literally.
Right. Well, I mean, maybe it was done better when you look into the eye of a dead creature and you see like prehistory through it.
Yeah. The director is Roy Ward Baker.
Yeah,
who was of course one of the go-to directors. At Hammer,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it is wonderfully framed. It's like I said, those sets of the tube construction
Right.
are, and I love the fact that they have to go through this like great hallway, which is eerily empty before going to the construction site.
Yeah. The set design is just incredible. Just like it looks and feels like a big movie, you know, where the other ones felt like a lot smaller. This looks and feels like a big movie, even though, like you said, like most of it is just dialogue scene to dialogue scene,
Yeah,
but it's a very smart movie.
a lot of it, a lot of this film is rests on Keir just slowly realizing how little agency he has in this world.
Yeah, for sure.
I love this. I love this film. I've seen it on the big screen
Oh, wow, nice.
because there was a Revival House a couple of years back that ran. You want to guess what the other film was on this double bill?
Oh,
It was another Hammer film.
okay.
I'll give you a hint. It's not one of the series.
Okay, yeah. Is it like the day the earth
No.
oh, okay.
The Devil Rides Out.
What? Whoa.
The
Wow.
Devil Rides Out and this film back to back.
Two fucking great movies. I wouldn't put them together, but damn, yeah, that sounds like a good night out.
It's just like that one night when I went to another Revival House when I was much younger, and they were showing Captain Chronos Vampire Hunter with Near Dark.
Wow.
But yeah, no,
Clash of tones.
this is the best. This is simply the best. This one I would give a 4.5 and a 5.
Yeah, this one's a five for me.
Yeah,
Just
this
like
is.
you can feel like the influence that this movie had just by watching it.
Toby Hooper apparently wanted to do this.
Oh, well,
Nigel Neal
yeah, well.
said. Nigel Neal said no.
And then we just got Life Force.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Take
Then came,
that. Take
okay,
that, Nigel Neal.
think of visionary genre directors from the late 90s.
Okay.
One of which, one of his films
Having trouble coming up with
is
any.
one of my favorite science fiction films of all time. But he came into prominence in the 90s.
You're gonna have to help me out. I'm not gonna be able to guess.
His first big budget film gained notoriety because of the death of the lead actor.
Oh, David Toohey.
No, Alex
Oh.
Proyas.
Sorry, right. Yeah, David. Why did I think
Alex
David Toohey was the
Proyas
crow?
was
Yeah,
going
Alex
to
Proyas.
do this, a
Was he
remake of
really?
this film.
Holy shit.
Exactly. But you know what happened? Nigel Neal was still alive and said, fuck no.
Huh. That sounds about right.
Yeah, no.
Our
And
man
by the
Nigel
way,
and his kindness.
around the same time, the BBC, this was during what they call the wilderness years of Doctor Who, and Paul Cornell wrote a novel called that ultimately was called Nightshade.
Okay.
That is a loving, an absolutely loving tribute to the Quatermass series. And the one of the main characters was supposed to be the actor who played Quatermass.
Okay.
Guess who said no?
Yeah.
So they had to,
Nigel.
yeah, Nigel said no, so they had to rename the character. But Nightshade, which is a really good Doctor Who novel, if you like Doctor Who,
Yeah.
would have been also around this time, Chris Carter
Really?
repeatedly, it's like every year, asked Nigel Neal to write an X-Files episode.
Yeah, I mean,
I mean, it feels like one in a lot of aspects.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you can see, you can seal Nigel Neal all over Chris Carter.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if Kolchak is any influence on X-Files, then the Quatermass stuff has to be for sure.
Yeah, so we could have
like what is Scully without Quatermass, right?
We could have had Alex Proyas's Quatermass in the pit.
Damn.
Yeah, exactly. But for a long time, there was no Quatermass after Quatermass in the pit.
Yeah.
But that Doctor Who connection comes up when Verity Lambert, the part of the, arguably one of the co-creators of Doctor Who from 1963, took over as the production head at EMI Films.
Okay.
And commissioned Neil to do a final Quatermass serial.
Okay.
Which came out in 1979. And we're going to talk about it next. And it's called, what are we going out with?
Well, you came up with a song for this one too.
Oh yes. Okay. This is Peter Gabriel, everybody's favorite weird uncle. And this song never fails to just like make chills run through me. And,
I do like to shock the monkey once in a while.
Yeah, well, Shock the Monkey you can shake your ass to Shock the Monkey.
For sure. Can't shake your ass to this one, though, right?
No, it's called The Intruder, although it's from the same album, I think.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
But anyway.
I'm not up on my Gabriel.
But anyway, yes, so it's The Intruder, because it's all about The Intruder.
By Peter Gabriel.
Yes.
take your bated breath charging the air. I like the touch and the smell of all the pretty dresses you wear.
And here we are, 1979.
Yeah, it's been a little while. It's been a little while, but
yep.
we're back on BBC's Quatermass train.
Well, actually, this one was shot for ITV.
Oh, right. Okay. All right.
To be precise, ITV's subsidiary, Thames Television.
Okay.
And I think Thames Television was owned by EMI. EMI was being run during its very last years by Verity Lambert, who is a pioneer of British science fiction television. And she invites Nigel Neal to write a final Quatermass story. And this is known as Quatermass 4 or the Quatermass Conclusion.
Mm-hmm. Or just Quatermass is,
yeah,
yeah, right. That's, yeah,
it is grim.
So this is maybe the weirdest one of the entire bunch, because while every prior film was adapted from a multi-episode serial, this multi-episode serial was turned into, edited into, the Quatermass Conclusion movie, which we don't really seem to have a line on. So,
and probably a good thing too. I remember watching the Quatermass Conclusion as a young man and being thoroughly confused.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that definitely makes sense, judging by, you know, my confusion of Quatermass 2. Right. Yeah. Quatermass Conclusion, judging by what we get in this, you know, essentially, you know, close to 4 hour, limited series, having that edited down to, you know, 90 to 100 minutes.
I think it was 3 hours. They cut it down to two and a half or three hours, but it still didn't make a lick of sense.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like there's a lot of essential information in every single episode of this of this show for the plot to carry forward. It's very interesting, even though, like it's sort of, I think it kind of starts out of the blue, right? Like we join a very different world.
Yeah, this takes place. It's set at the end of the 20th century, but I choose to look at it as in the near future.
Yeah.
And Britain is in the process of what I like to refer to as a slow motion apocalypse.
Yeah.
Everything has fallen apart. There are controlled blackouts. It is absolutely impossible to walk the streets at night. In fact, the opening of the film has our Quatermass, in this film played by Sir John Mills, accosted and about to be killed before, of course, Manimal shows up. Simon McCorkadale. That's all I... It's funny because, you know, it's like I'm looking at him and it's like he looks like the actor who played Gambit in the... Not Gambit, the superhero. Gambit, the character in the New Avengers. But I knew him as Manimal.
Huh.
But
yes. I know him as Manimal, but...
Yes, we all know. So, he is saved by Manimal. And they're both supposed to appear on a television show.
Hold on a second. Do you remember Nightman?
Yes, and there was a Manimal...
Yeah, there was a Manimal crossover episode.
Yeah, there was a Manimal sequel slash backdoor pilot for a new Manimal show, because that's
I guess it was probably more like Millennium and X-Files.
Yeah, well, the idea was that the daughter, Manimal Jr.
Right.
Was going to be the star of what Glenn Larson was hoping would be the spinoff.
Yeah.
But anyway, so they're commemorating a space station? The building of a new space station or something?
Are they?
It is a space mission.
It's like an American and Russian space mission, yes, that they're not really part of, right?
Yeah, but they're there to commentate.
Right.
Quatermass representing the old school of space exploration.
Right.
And Manimal. I'm sorry, I know that he has a character name, but I can't think of him as anything but Manimal.
Cop? Joe, yeah. Cop? Joe Cop, is that it?
Yes.
Joe Cap?
Yes.
Joe Cap. There it is.
Yeah. Which now sounds like the son of Andy Cap, but yeah.
Or if you're much younger than both of us, it sounds like No Cap.
But anyway,
I'm still not sure what that means. No lying, right? That's what that means.
Yeah.
All right. I'm not that old.
So Quatermass is apparently retired, but he's been looking for his granddaughter Hetty. Who we know in the... It's pretty blatantly laid out in the first episode.
Yeah.
Is with the planet people.
Yeah.
And according to my dear, dear friend Jim Moon over at Hypnagoria, there was quite a backlash to this serial because they thought that Nigel Neal didn't understand young people.
You don't say.
No.
How dare you suggest that, sir? First of all, how dare you?
The planet people are wandering around chanting lay, 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 which I thought meant ley lines. And I thought that there was ley lines were going to come into this in some point.
Is that what they're saying? They're saying lay?
Lay, lay, lay. Yes.
Hmm.
And they're gathering at these standing stone sites.
Yeah.
Then there's a bright light.
Of which UK has several.
Yes. Then there's a bright light. And then the planet people are gone.
Yeah.
There's a lot of this ash left around.
Yeah, yeah. There's also, like, corpses left around, too.
And one young lady who seems to have survived.
Yes.
But by the third episode, literally blows up. And so they're trying to figure out what the heck is going on, first off, and how to stop it from going on.
Yeah.
And what it turns out is going on is that back in prehistory, some aliens planted basically, I guess you could call them combines. Galactic combines.
Yeah.
And when When there's a machine in outer space that's monitoring all these combines, and when they detect a certain signature that indicates that mankind is ready, they eat them.
Yeah.
And isn't that scary about
They
this thing?
beam them
It's
up
not about aliens.
into my belly.
Yes. The funny thing is, this is not about Quatermass versus aliens. This is about Quatermass versus a machine.
Yeah.
And
But still, like a machine from beyond space and time. At the same time. I mean, it's a fantastic idea. It's just, this is a very different Quatermass.
Yeah, he's very broken.
Very doddering. Yeah,
Yeah.
very like no, like he's very much like he has to be led and helped
Yeah.
the whole time. I get that he's like old, but I mean,
Oh, and there's that
like that's a
key
choice
line
that they made, right?
that one of Joe's daughters says. And I think it's the third, the second episode before, of course, what happens happens, where she says to Joe and to Joe's wife, he doesn't look very old anymore because he's got a problem.
Right.
Unfortunately, I don't know, even though the fourth episode begins with a really, really gross concept, because the sky changes.
Right.
And when we find out why the sky changes, it's really gross.
Right.
Most of the fourth episode is a bunch of old people playing with electronics.
Yes, very true. Quatermass assembles a lab full of old people because they've discovered that, like the older you are, the less
Yeah.
influence that the machine has on you, right?
Because in particular, your scent changes when you get older, because of course you're
Old
no
people
longer.
stink, right?
Yeah. Well, no, the thing is that when you
Well,
get
that's what they say,
yeah,
right?
when you get beyond a certain age, there's certain chemicals you're no longer producing.
Right,
So your
pheromones and all
scent
that.
changes.
Yeah.
That's why, of course, one of the minor supporting characters in this is a scent scientist. There's
They
also,
threw fucking everything at this one.
yeah,
You got
and it,
the kids from Act Two of Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome
oh,
grown up a little bit
yeah,
and marching through a war zone.
it's definitely at 4 hours, I think it is too long.
Yes.
The fact that they spend a whole like 30 minutes just so that Quatermass can get lost in the ruins of London
Yeah.
and meet some old people.
They do waste a lot of time with
Yeah.
that. But of course, if he doesn't meet the old people, then he doesn't have all the people for his lab in episode four. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting that you say that the edited down movie version of this is 3 hours,
Yeah.
which I think maybe would be optimal for this limited series. Like, I think maybe if they concentrated things into 3 episodes rather than four, they might have a much more
Yeah.
compelling story. Like, how many times do we need to, like listen to them chanting the Ringstone Round song?
Yeah,
You
yeah.
know, like dial it down a little bit, guys. But also, I like that this one, they did something different at least. They went post-apocalyptic with it, or maybe at least apocalyptic with
Yeah,
it,
well,
rather than the normal apocalyptic feel
right.
of a Quatermass
I'd like to
story.
cite has a possible suggestion of how to describe this. My friend, the film critic William Bibbiani, who calls these type of films mid-apocalypse films.
Right.
It looks wonderful, though. It's direct.
I'm just a little confused though. Like, he's making his way to like what I guess would be like ITV Studios.
Yes.
Like to so in the midst of
like the entire society has already fallen apart, right? Yeah. Like you shouldn't be out alone at night.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And there are roving gangs of murderous civilians out there. And, yeah. And yet the TV show is still running like a news commentary on like world news,
you know, when they're not weird. Showing, impressionistic pornography in the name of children's programming.
Yeah, right, right.
It's such so a weird scene. Oh my goodness. I mean it looks nice.
I mean it's, you know, it's pretty well shot.
Joe Cap goes through fucking hell and back.
You know what? Simon McCorkendale, he's the person who probably had the most work to do for this thing. And I thought he was pretty great.
Oh, yeah, no.
For a guy who I would kind of consider sort of a mid-level actor.
Which is why I was kind of disappointed when he has the confrontation with Kick-Along, who's like the leader of the Planet People.
Yeah.
And Kick-Along.
Just so you know, when you hear Planet People, it's hippies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kick-Along offers to reprogram him.
Yeah.
And we learn what the philosophy of the Planet People are. And I'm like, that's kind of disappointing.
Yeah.
That's, and yeah, and Cap is like, tries and then says, wait, fuck this shit.
Well, their whole plan is just to travel to whatever ancient site that exists so they can also be taken in air quotes to a different planet. Taken, of course, not reduced to ash. And
yeah,
their essences transported, you know, billions of light years away for sustenance, which is basically what they're doing, I guess.
Yeah, for the proteins, basically. Yeah,
yeah. Again, great idea. Just like this one, while the other ones felt like even if there are detracting aspects from the story, it's like at least it's like really intelligent, you know, like it's a very sober intelligence those three films have. This story is like the only one of the whole bunch where it's like, oh yeah, like you can picture a lot of coke being done, you know, during production and during the writing. Definitely not the editing though, but you think they'd be cutting things and making it move a little quicker, but yeah, they just really went balls to the wall with the ideas in this one. Again, all the ideas are great. I like it. I love the idea of, like, it didn't even need to be post-apocalyptic for me. Like, if this movie was just about the cult or the planet people traveling around and Quatermass trying to stop them, that would have been enough, you know? Like, that central idea would have been enough, but just like the idea, there's so much going on here and it's so dense, but we're also doing stuff over and over and over. Like, he spends like the first two episodes wandering through London.
There is an episode in this 4-episode serial, which pretty much consists of Quatermass in a truck with the local, basically the local officer.
Yeah, yeah.
As they drive to London on an empty road.
Yeah.
And talking about how terrible the world is. And I'm like, I don't really need that.
Yeah. Yeah, especially since
they go and kill off that character at the end of the series, at the end of the episode.
Yeah. Right.
It's like, for here's an important character. Look at how important it is. Look at how much time we've... Oh, she's dead. Now Quatermass is caught in a gang war between two gangs.
Mm-hmm.
But we should mention, Pierce Haggard directed this.
Yeah.
who, of course, directed one of the great trinity of folk horror.
What did he direct?
Did he direct Blood and Satan's Claw?
Oh, did he? Confused?
I'm pretty sure he did.
You know, I can't even tell you.
Give me a second. This isn't,
I'm on the... I don't even see his name on the Quatermass TV serial Wikipedia page.
No, he did. He did direct...
Director's not even listed.
Blood and Satan's Claw.
Oh, there it is. Pierce Hargett.
And he did direct the serial. Yeah.
Huh.
So... and you would think that considering this has twinges of folk horror.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
It would work well if only we didn't get the, like I said, the bizarre impressionistic porno and the underground car, you know, community built of cars.
Yeah.
But the thing about this thing is, I think this is the bleakest feeling of all the Quatermass films.
Yeah, that's you can make a pretty easy argument for that. Although I guess I would still say there's some hope at the end.
Well, I have a little bit of an issue with the ending. I think they should have let the world die.
I mean, it seemed like that would be the most impactful and perhaps the most obvious direction.
They thought, as we were leading up to the grand finale, that the ending was going to be he finally finds what he's been looking for, namely his granddaughter, and it's because he finds her that the world ends.
Right.
You know, he's more concerned with you know, saving his granddaughter.
Yeah, yeah.
Than he is with pushing that button, which sends energy!
Of course.
Yes, because that's Quatermass's solution for everything. And energy at it!
Hey, this time, what's the machine trying to do? Take their energy, right?
Yes, well, the antidote, no, the machine is like a combine for human proteins.
Right, right.
And the green sky that is left towards the end of this serial is everything else that is left of the human body.
Yeah, yeah.
Filtering the sunlight.
Yeah, it's like just like human effluvia.
Yeah,
in the atmosphere. It's pretty great. Like, again, another great idea. Mm-hmm. Like, that's an apocalypse that I don't think we've ever heard of before. The one where the sky is discolored by the physical remains of I don't know, interstellarly genocided teenagers.
So right after this, Neil decided to try to break into Hollywood. He did the first draft of Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, which sent John Carpenter over the moon because, of course, he idolized Neil.
Yeah.
He also was contracted by John Landis to write a script for Creature from the Black Lagoon. The Creature from the Black Lagoon project never worked out, not because John Landis is a garbage human, but because John Landis was insisting that it be made in 3D.
Right.
In the early 90s, right after Carpenter made Memoirs of an Invisible Man, Universal said, "This film's going to be big. Would you like to do anything from our horror catalog?" And John Carpenter said, "I'd like to do The Creature of the Black Lagoon, please. We have this script by Nigel Neal." And John Carpenter said, "Hell no, I'll hire my own guy." Yeah, and Neil.
That feels. Neil, I've never heard that story before, but that feels very, very much like a Carpenter story.
Neil could not shut up about how much he hated Halloween 3: Season of the Witch.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I see Halloween 3: Season of the Witch in the Quatermass films.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, like, like I see its influence. I don't know. Like, he's just a crank, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, like, this often happens. I think, I don't know. Maybe it just happens with with men in general, but perhaps because we're always talking to writers and trying to figure out what writers feel. Perhaps it's just highlighted in the writing community about certain cranks. I mean, of course, you know, like from Harlan Ellison on, you know.
But yeah, this is, it's too long. It's too crotchety. But yes, it does have that atmosphere.
Yeah, it's very, really the most alien thing of of this movie is how teenagers act, you know, like it's very much an old man trying to reckon with a youth counterculture that sprung up between, you know, the last film and the most recent Quatermass thing that he's working on. Right. So. Mm-hmm. It's very much like I said earlier in this recording, it's very much like analogy, you know, the Quatermass analogy or whatever, you know.
There is one more bit of Quatermass ephemera.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Please.
Neil wrote in the later years of his life in the 90s, a audio play for BBC Radio 3 called The Quatermass Memoirs, which was purportedly supposed to be Neil doing a account of what led him to write the Quatermass experiment.
Huh.
But there he wove within it a kind of a through line featuring the actual Quatermass, in this case voiced by Andrew Keir.
Okay.
And of course there was the film that you the serial that you talked about, the Quatermass time travel.
Right.
But,
well, technically a prequel.
So
Quatermass and the Third Reich. What a fucking title.
Oh gosh. But I can imagine that would have really tarnished him. Has, you know, his reputation as a writer.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that came to fruition. But for the Quatermass conclusion Quatermass 4, I guess I would it's a pity we can't do quarters because I would give it a 3.75.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's better than Enemy from Space.
Yeah.
Better than Quatermass 2, but not by much. So I give it a very, very lackluster, crotchety 4.
Okay. I see my face scrunched up the moment you started mentioning rating it, because I was like, fuck, yeah, right, I forgot. We have to rate this. Ugh. I don't know, man. Like, it's just, it's chock full of cool ideas. Mm-hmm. But it's overly long, a little silly, a little. Out of everything, which makes sense because he's the oldest, but out of everything written to do with Quatermass, this feels like very much written by an old man.
Right. I do wonder if Hammer was around at the time that this was being written.
Yeah.
But it was literally coughing up blood.
Yeah. There wasn't much to do with Hammer left after that.
I think there was only one more film that Hammer put out around this time, which was, of course, the infamous To the Devil a Daughter.
Right.
The film that made, as Wheatley say, never let anyone touch my stuff again.
And you got to listen to him because he'll put a fucking spell on you.
Yeah. But I wonder if it would have a better reputation if there was a 2-hour version of this story.
But also, can you imagine the 2-hour version of that story?
Okay, point taken.
You know, like, which is why I'm like, I would have been happy with Quatermass following around this traveling cult of teenagers.
Right.
It doesn't need to be through the ruins of England. It doesn't need to be, but I don't know. They went there, so go for it. But I don't know. Like, you can call this the Quatermass analogy. You can call this Quatermass doesn't understand kids today, but
Quatermass, get off my lawn.
Yeah, Quatermass Gran Torino. Quater Gran Torino. There we go.
Okay, now I'm picturing Clint Eastwood as Quatermass.
Yeah.
What a fucking stupid thing you kids are doing. But
that looks like the moon facility. Oh God. I'm going to give it a 3.
Yes. And I would say, if I had to rank the 4, it would be Pit.
And then
Experiment.
A bit of a jump. And then, yeah. Experiment. Conclusion.
And way, way down at 2. 2.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he's still one of my idols, right up there with Dennis Potter, who we've talked about before. I definitely recommend checking out The Pit. If you like The Pit, check out Experiment. Also, check out The Stone Tape, which is his overtly horror.
Yes. Yeah.
Serial. So he died. I think in 2005 or so.
Okay.
Sorry, 2006. He died in 2006. And
he was 273 years old.
Yes. And God help us, his estate still wouldn't let the BBC name check Bernard Quatermass in Doctor Who until this year.
Damn. So, like, there's not going to be a new Quatermass then.
I think the fact that they
allowed
Quatermass to be mentioned in one of the episodes last season of Doctor Who might be an indication that maybe we might get like another remake.
Right.
I know that speaking of Doctor Who, David Tennant has been kind of vocal about, I'd love to play Quatermass.
Right. I'd like to see that. Like David Tennant.
But I wish I could go to the reality that when Alex Proyas did that remake.
Yeah, no shit. That's wild.
Oh my God. It would have to be, if they did another Quatermass film, it would have to be a very specific kind of director.
Yeah.
Somebody like Lantimos.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Who knows how to get his freak flag on.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
You know. So yeah, that's it. That's Quatermass.
That's Quatermass. Well, I'm glad I finally got around to checking these out.
And thank you for giving me a little bit of a platform to talk about one of my heroes.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We got one more song before we leave this recording of you and I.
Okay.
And it's by a band that you and I both love.
Okay.
And it's also what you could put as another, you know, subtitle to this last Quatermass serial. This is Bad Religion with the Hippie Killers.
Yes.
Thanks, Tom.
You're welcome, Des.
That is us, my friends. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode as much as I did putting it together for you. And if you did, you can support the show by joining patreon.com/dreadmedia. Patreon.com/dreadmedia. Thank you so much to everyone who does. You can also send me feedback. I love to get feedback. dreadmediapodcast@gmail.com. dreadmediapodcast@gmail.com. And then, you know, I'm on... You know, I'm basically like at Dread Media on all the things. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Blue Sky. And there's a Facebook group just called Dread Media. I'm, you know, one of the mods, moderators. Is that what we are of the group? But it's a fine group. It's a lovely group. Honestly, like, never had a problem. Had to delete some spam once or twice, but that's it. So, really fun. Check it out. I think that's everything. Yeah, that's everything. I'm going to play another song, of course, to play us out. And, you know, it's probably better it worked out this way, because I was going to play this song after our review of Quatermass in the Pit. But Tom wanted to throw in another song there. So that's fine. And it's actually worked out because, you know, this is actually on the longer side, this song. But I wanted to play it anyway because it is from a brand new record, or at least from a record from this past year. Will it make my year-end list? I'm not sure. That's what this next week in a bit is for. Me listening to a lot of shit, watching a lot of shit, you know, trying to get a few more comic books read. But, earlier this year, wait, do I have a date on this? Yeah, March 20th. Maybe even earlier than that. But Imperial Triumphant released, released Gold Star, all one word, Gold Star. And this is a song from Gold Star. It's called Eye of Mars. You guys take care of yourselves. Take care of others. Enjoy this early part of the new year, and we'll see you hopefully next week with the year in review episode, if not the week after that. Okay, goodbye. Take care of yourselves. Bye-bye now.
Thank you. up and massaging is done by the new medium, and it is ignored.